You're listening to Making Money Online with Lisa Johnson, the podcast that tells you what it really takes to build a business and the simple steps to get you there. I'm determined to share with you the reality of easy, simple business marketing tips to make passive income so that you can start making money online. Hello and welcome to this week's podcast. I have got somebody really cool with me today that I think you're going to really like, and somebody that we can learn a lot from because she's been in business for a long time and she's doing some big things. So I'm here with Sophie Milliken, who works with founders and senior execs to raise their profile. And how Sophie talks about it is it's like a modern PR agency, and really want to explore what that means, because I do think that PR has changed, especially for online businesses. It's changed. So welcome to the podcast, Sophie.
Thanks for having me. Although you're making me feel old saying that.
It's because I feel like a baby in business when I'm like, I've been in business for 6 years. Everyone's always like, wow, you're really new. So, I mean, this isn't your first business. Like, you have Mojo, which is this modern PR agency. What did you do before that?
Completely different. So I had, similar to you, you know, quite a corporate career. So after I left uni, I joined the John Lewis graduate scheme, worked in all sorts of different roles within John Lewis, ended up in the head office down in London, and ended up being responsible for graduate recruitment. So quite an interesting career journey through retail. And I then left about, over 10 years ago now, and set up my first business. So the reason for that was that I'd moved back to Newcastle, was commuting to London, which is a bonkers commute at the best of times. And I'd have my daughter, she's now 11, but she was a baby at that point. And I just couldn't keep doing that commute. And then my team was moving out to Bracknell. Newcastle to Bracknell just made no sense whatsoever. So I was an accidental business owner the first time round. So not intentional at all. It was because I was on really great money in that job, was looking at roles that were even vaguely similar in Newcastle, and they were on like a third of the salary that I was on with John Lewis. Yeah. So much as I'm not completely motivated by money, to take that much of a drop when I was, you know, early 30s at that point, just was a bit bonkers. So set up the first business, which was working within graduate recruitment, but on the consultancy side. So we used to work with really big employers, AXA, JP Morgan, Marks and Spencers, Expedia, people like that. And we would design their assessment processes and materials. But then the really fun bit that I enjoyed the most was actually working with universities. So we used to prepare their students for graduate jobs. And we did it in quite a quirky way. So we used to hire out football stadiums and put 200-400 students a day through a mock assessment centre.
Oh, wow.
Giving them a taste for the real thing and giving them lots of feedback that was helpful. So very, very different from what I'm doing now.
Really different. So why did you start that? Because that is quite different even to what you were doing in John Lewis. I suppose you had the graduate side of it, which would have helped. But I mean, not many people just go, oh, you know what, I'm going to start a business and go in for something that big.
It wasn't intentional. So I set it up with a co-founder at the time, but he only stayed for a few years. And I think one of my strengths is around saying yes to things and figuring things out. So yeah. I knew all the employer side of it, but that whole concept of doing the football stadiums was a bit bonkers looking back. It came about because a contact of mine at Manchester Met Uni, who I'd known through John Lewis, had got in touch to say she wanted to run a large-scale assessment centre with her students and could we help? And I'm like, yeah, sure we can. So whereas I was used to as an employer running an assessment centre for like 12 candidates max, she was like, oh, we want to do it for 850.
Yeah, that's fine, sure.
We could do that. And the first one we did was actually in a hotel, which was such a bad venue because you had rooms all over the place on different floors, no logic to the rooms. So the students were just wandering around. It was quite chaotic. But as soon as we cottoned on to the idea of doing them in football stadiums, it just took off because it made the logistics really simple. It was quite fun for the students. And it was a really great way. We used to run their events at the Etihad Stadium, so the Man City Stadium, so a beautiful stadium. And we would invite other unis to come along and observe what was happening. They were sort of taken in with the excitement and the energy that was in those events. And it made it a really easy sell. So, yeah, it was kind of a case of saying yes to something and then
work out later. So what happened to that business? Because that's not the business you have now.
Correct. So I grew that business quite significantly at the point where my co-founder left. And I think what made, there was a couple of things that made that business really successful. One was actually him leaving, because he'd fallen out of love with the business. And I still was really excited about it. I knew it was going to be a big business. And he just thought it's just going to get to, he said to me, oh, it's going to be like a 250 grand business. This is a year in. I said, you're absolutely wrong. And I always laugh when I tell that story now, because we, at the end, we had multiple contracts that were worth 250 grand alone. So yeah, it really changed a lot. And I knew that it had that potential. So when he left, at that point, he was doing all the sales for the business. So I had become a single parent. So traveling was quite challenging for me at that point. So he was out on the road doing the sales, and I was managing the operations back in the office. But as soon as he left, I then had to go out and win the business. So literally the day he left, there was nothing in the order book for that year. It was the start of a new year. And I was like, shit, is this going to work out? Yeah. What have I done? Should I go get a job? And literally within 6 weeks, I had more business than we'd ever done booked in. So it was that passion for him. So that was one key moment. But the other thing was, when I started doing things that raised my profile within that industry, so it was things like I wrote a book, I was a guest on people's podcasts, we won loads of awards, all these things just kept adding and adding to the profile of me in that industry and of putting a spotlight on the business. So it wasn't intentional, but when I started realizing the impact these things were having, it's like, ah, this is quite interesting. At that point, I was approached by a bigger business than me to sell the business. And it hadn't been on my radar at all. So it definitely wasn't something that I was planning. But I was, if I'm being really honest, I was flattered by the offer to buy this, you know, buy the business. I also still had that fear around, am I going to get these contracts every year? And I shouldn't have had that looking back, because every year we would get them renewed. There was always that nervousness about, is it going to get renewed? So when they offered me this money and offered me the terms to, you know, come across the new business, we're going to grow it, you're going to be a group director, and, you know, we're going to just smash this industry, and then we're going to get a bigger payout later on, I thought it was exciting. I was, you know, I had quite a big team by that point. I had a core team, but with lots of associates. So we had about 50 associates working with us. And I didn't have anyone that was really operating at my level. So I felt quite alone at times. So I saw that as being an opportunity to basically have a peer group of directors and to grow this as a big group. So I did do the deal. You can probably tell where this is going from the way that I'm working, but I did the deal in September 2019. I got some cash at that point, had to do an earn out of a year. So then got some more cash at that point. And then the rest of the deal was tied up in options that vested over 3 years. And then we hit the pandemic, and that kind of masked some of the concerns that I had for quite a while, because we were in panic mode. Like, we're running this business where the bulk of it at that point was running massive events for hundreds of people. Obviously you can't do that anymore. So I had to, and this was one good thing about having sold the business, was we had a team of software developers on the other side of the business. So straight away, I was like, we need to create an online assessment platform, because the ones that were in the market were really expensive. I had to persuade one of my clients to be a case study or a test.
Yeah.
Try it out online so that we could record it, so I could then sell it on to everyone else. Anyway, it did work, and we ended up having a record year because the unis were panicking so much about what could they do online. We were like, hey, we've got this fantastic. So we actually did do really well out of that. But like I say, it masked some of the concerns and some of the issues I had with these guys. So they were based in Manchester. We had an office in London, and we had our office in Newcastle. We then bought a business based in Sheffield. So we're onboarding these new businesses. And I just a few things happened that made me feel really uncomfortable. There were things that I was promised in the deal, in the contracts, even in the paperwork, that just didn't happen. And I kept asking, and then they'd fob me off, and I'd kept asking. Then it got to a point where things were going a bit more back to normal after the pandemic. And I'd be in the leadership meetings with the other directors, and I'd be quite naughty actually at times around asking for things and, you know, highlighting things that weren't happening, questioning and challenging things, which as a director,
what I should do. Yeah.
And then it just got to a point where I just thought, I just don't like the direction of things. There was a real key point where I felt like I was being asked to do something that was quite unethical around essentially overcharging a client. And I just said I wasn't going to do it. And I didn't do it because that would have really crossed the line for me. But it was someone that had one of these big contracts and they hadn't spent all the money. And normally I would just say to the client, which I did, you can either, I'll either charge you for it and we'll bank it and you can use it next year, or I'll just charge you for what you've had. And someone else in the business said to me, oh, no, you need to just charge them for that. And I was like, I'm not.
No.
So stuff like that. And it just got to the point where I hated it. I really hated it. I was really unhappy. So long story short is that I decided I wanted to leave in, oh God, what are we in now? 20, must have been the end of 21. And that was quite painful getting out because I had a lot of money still in the business. I wanted to take that with me. I assumed that if I cashed in my shares that they would offer me a fair value for them. They didn't. They basically said, oh, you can keep them to benefit from the future value, but I'd had to pay quite a lot of money to vest them. So I had that dilemma around, well, do I stick with it? But then I'm still associated with them. Whereas to me, I've made the decision I want to be, you know, clean break. And it also came with a lot of restrictions, some of which were around employing people that I wanted, you know, wanted to bring across the new business and stuff. So in the end, I told them to shove it.
I'm good.
It is good, Lisa. But do you know what? It was also quite painful.
I can imagine it would from the financial side of it. But I think sometimes you know deep down that you can make that money easily in a different way.
Well, that was kind of what I was thinking. But as the money started being plunged into the new venture and I'm hemorrhaging money left, right and centre, there's been a few moments where I've thought, did I do the right thing? But I think you can't put a price on pride, integrity, ethics, your values. And for me, they just weren't aligned. So I did lose a lot of money doing that. But I did get the clean break and then started again. But whenever you exit any business, even even if you tell them to shove it, you've still got to abide by quite a few terms. So one of those was that I couldn't operate in the same industry for 9 months. So I was thinking, well, do I just wait and bide my time? Because I had enough money, I could have done that. But then I thought, no, I've kind of had enough of that industry anyway. I want to try something new. And I'd gone and had a chat with a friend of mine who owns two very, very successful businesses. And she was like, what are you going to do next? And I said, I've got this slightly mad idea. And I described the idea. And I said, basically, it's all this profile raising stuff that really helped me in my business, but doing it for other people. Does that make sense? And she said to me, I think it's brilliant. She said, I'll be your first client. This is totally a service that is, you know, is needed. And that gave me the confidence to go away, create a pitch deck, and use that to kind of build the initial team and think about what we're going to offer.
I think there's a massive learning in here, and that is that exactly what you said, you can't put a price on ethics. Like, there's always going to be decisions that have to be made that are financial, and some of them are going to be really hard. But I think that if you were to have stayed and done the things that you needed to do, I don't think you would like yourself very much. And I think it's much more important to like yourself and to lose that money. And I really do believe that money comes back to you when you do things for the right reason.
I think that too. And sometimes you've just got to go with your gut instinct, and it's never wrong, is it?
It's never wrong. Let's talk about Mojo, because this business you started, it seemed like a crazy idea, is working really well. Tell me what you, so when you say like you help people raise their profiles, doing what?
The easiest way to describe it is if someone Googles one of our clients' names, all the stuff that comes up on Google should be stuff that we've helped to put there. So it's way beyond personal branding, which is why I don't like using that term, because people associate personal branding with social media. And although we can help with social media around strategy and optimizing profiles, we're not ghostwriters for people's social media. So I don't ever want to be sort of labeled with that personal branding brush. So the stuff we do is creating content that people can then share on the social media, which is the channels that they're going to use to share it. So it's going to be things like awards, if they want to get guest articles in journals or magazines or press coverage, because everything we do is underpinned by press coverage, but only at the point where there's a story to tell. So that's going to get picked up. Awards. We've got speaking. So everyone wants to do speaking at the moment. So making sure that they've got a great speakers pack and that we're pitching them out to the right places. People that want support with TEDx. So that, again, very popular. People want to support, you know, it's really competitive to actually get on a TEDx stage. They get hundreds or thousands of applications. So it's, we've just had a client literally 2 weeks ago that did one. So we helped put the pitch together for that and then helped to prepare her for that event. We give people networking strategies. We will help with accreditations for their business, for them. So all sorts of different activities that all kind of go together. Board coaching as well, people that want to take on non-executive roles. So all these different bits that will make up someone's bio. And that's why my podcast called Beyond the Bio, because it's all those bits that add to someone's bio.
Yeah, it is. And what I like about this is that normally when you speak to people that do PR, they basically try and fit you into the stories that people are looking for in newspapers and magazines. I like that you only do the press bit. The press bit is almost like your last bit, like when there's a story, when you've done something else for them that makes it press worthy, like winning an award or writing a book or getting a TEDx. And I think that's a brilliant way to do it. And I think it's quite different to do it that way, but good.
Well, I think because we're focused on the other stuff, like you say, it is the last piece, whereas a more traditional PR agency, that's their main focus. So they have to do it in that way. I think the downsides of that are if you're getting the coverage, it might not be in front of the right audience. It might be a bit more of a vanity thing. And actually, that's all right. We've all got egos. We love to be in magazines and newspapers and things, and we all like that. But I would be questioning sometimes with, you know, I was talking to a prospect literally a week ago who's been in loads of very good press, you know, magazines that everyone would have heard of, newspapers you've heard of on the TV. And I said to him, how much business have you got from that? Nothing. Okay, yeah. Right. So how do we join it up so that it actually relates back to what you're selling? Because you're getting it for some quite random things and so what?
Yeah, it doesn't help as much, does it? Let's talk about awards, because you and I have a course about awards together that is out there. So when we first started talking, one of the things that I had a real problem with was awards because, you know, I'm really open to my audience about how I think most awards are money-making schemes. And I get that they have to be a business, but I think a lot of them don't have merit with them, you know, especially the ones where it's just like, get people to vote for you. Like you're trying to get your mum and your school friends to vote for you. That doesn't mean anything to me about business. And also the ones where you have to pay quite a lot to enter and then everyone sort of wins. I don't like those either. And you introduced me to one of the awards, the Great British Entrepreneur Awards, which I really like the way they do it. One of the biggest things I like about what they do is they have a proper panel and you put an application in that is thorough and they read through it all, but there's quite a lot of judges that have to look at each individual bit and they don't talk to each other about what is going on. And they're all esteemed people in their own right, the judges. I really liked that. And I liked that you had to show evidence of things. I think that's really important. I think that those kind of awards are few and far between. I think there are more awards that aren't like that, that are. But I really wanted to explore this, you know, getting an award. I've never had an award. I've never been a finalist. I was a finalist this year for the GBEA. And I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the process of it, mostly. There are always going to be bits that I don't like, and that's just, you know, we all have different integrity bars, I suppose. But what I saw was that when people do want an award, what they wanted to know is, A, how can they tell a bad award from a good award? B, when they get an award, rather than just putting it in their bio on Instagram, how can they leverage that? How can they use it? And C, when it's a really good award, it's going to take some effort to apply for it. What is the best way to go about doing that? So you have the best chance if you're going to go in for an award. And I spoke to you and you obviously have this wealth of knowledge about awards because you've helped people go in for awards. You've won awards yourself. Do you agree with me that there are some awards that aren't worth bothering with?
Yes.
Good.
I totally agree with that. And I think you've highlighted what the red flags are around those. So if you're asked to pay to enter an award, now, There is a bit of a caveat around this one because some industries are known for it, but it should be a nominal fee rather than you're buying the award.
Yes.
So I don't know if you get these emails or if any of your listeners get these emails, but every other day I get an email saying I've won an award and I only need to pay $2,000 to get the trophy and be in some magazine that I've never heard of.
Yeah.
There's a lot of that going around. So if you are told that you've won something and you need to pay for the trophy, massive scam. Do not do that. And it's so not credible. And I spot people on LinkedIn who post that they've won that and post with the trophy. And I'm like, I know how you got that. And straight away, they kind of go down in my estimation.
Yeah, the trust goes right.
Total scam, total scam. So that's not cool. You shouldn't have to buy even a ticket to go to the awards. You should want to if you get shortlisted, but it shouldn't be a condition. And you'll have seen at the GBAs, there were people that won that didn't come. So that, again, is the ethics. And I think the other thing to look at is, who are the previous winners? Are they people that you see as credible? Looking at the judges, again, are they credible? And I think your point around, you know, being asked for specific information that, you know, adds credibility to it, but also the judging process. The GBA is a great example. Not only do they have judges that have got credible backgrounds, but it's the process. So I judge on the GBAs and I have to do really obscure region now because I know too many people, but, and that's part of the process. I have to declare a conflict because I could not do the Northeast anymore because I just know too many people.
Yeah.
So I declare that as conflict. But when I get my award entries, I don't even know who the other judges are in that category because we do it online. We have to do scores and comments, and then they're all collated centrally. So I still don't even know who the other judges were in the categories I judged. And I'm usually pretty accurate. So the ones that would be my top scorers do tend to win. I can't think where that's not happened, but that could happen because they're looking at it and benchmarking it centrally, which I think is really, really
It's a really, really important way of doing it. When I was in the wedding planning industry, there were some awards, like the Wedding Industry Awards or something like that. And I eventually, my husband got onto the judging panel because I wanted to see how it worked from the inside. And it was so corrupt. Like, everybody was talking to each other. All the judges were talking to each other about who's nice and who's not nice and who they liked and who they didn't like, you know, why this person shouldn't really win. And there were people in regions that won Wedding Planner of the Year that have never done a wedding, had never done one wedding. And it really put me off awards. It's only really this year when I've started to realise there are a handful of really good ones out there that
I think more than a handful. I think you've probably had, like, that is an extremely, extreme bad example for sure, bad experience. And I think there are some like that, but I think they're quite easy to spot. So, you know, a great example or a great tip that I would give someone that's thinking about looking at awards is look at your peer group and look at ones that have won awards and see what they are and just delve a bit deeper into them and see if you think they're credible, because there are so many benefits from doing awards. As soon as you get to the point where you've been shortlisted, you can promote that on your socials. You can talk about it. People do generally like to see people do well. And I find that you get a lot of engagement on those posts. On the day itself, you can get, you know, you can celebrate with your team, which is fantastic, but you can get nice pictures there. And obviously, if you win, or even if you don't win, you know, being shortlisted is still a massive achievement for most people when there's thousands of people that you're up against. But you can promote that. You'll probably get a finalist or a winner's badge that can then go in your email signature, in any proposals that you might send out for clients, on pitch decks, on presentation decks, on your website. There's so many different ways that you can use it. And then it's thinking about those wider benefits. So, you know, I met you through the GBA. Yeah. And that, you know, would we have met otherwise? Well, we might have, because we've got quite a few friends in common, but who knows? And I think it's those opportunities that are created by awards programs that are so powerful. You know, I've picked up clients in both of my businesses from attending awards things and getting sat next to someone that's been really interesting.
And you might not think of that, really. I think most people think of awards as, well, going for an award, I get some marketing out of it. But actually, there is that. I've met quite a few people now through just one awards. You know, I've only ever entered one and I've met quite a lot of people through it. And I do think that there are more benefits to it than at first thought.
Well, I'm glad that you're converted.
I'm converted to some of them. But what I like is in the course, you talk about how to spot the good ones, like the ones worth having, because I think that's really important. And then we also delve into how to put your best foot forward with these things, how to, you know, really showcase what you do in an awards application, because I think that it's more difficult than people think. You know, there is a lot to it, and people are putting stellar applications through.
I think so. And I think it is important to, it's like a job application. If you do 100, you're probably not going to get shortlisted for any. But if you do 3 or 4, you've got a better chance of getting through to the next stage. And I think it's a similar approach for awards. So it's making sure that you've got all the information that they need. And the awards judges, they love stories. So they want to hear some of the personal stories. They want to hear about your why. They want to see the stats around your business. So you can't be fluffy. You've got to be really focused. And it's really important to do a lot of that preparation in advance so that you're not kind of leaving everything to the last minute and it's all rushed and just a bit crap. And as an awards judge, you know, I've seen different qualities of applications, and you can really tell the ones that people have spent time and effort on, for sure.
Yeah, brilliant. If you're interested in awards, by the way, and finding out more how to, you know, get an award yourself, have an award-winning business, then do have a look at our course. I've put the link in the show notes for that. So with your PR, call it PR, I think it's a bit more than PR what you do, but with your PR hat on, if somebody was like, I really want to raise my profile in 2024, like this is what I really want to do, what would be one thing that you would tell them to do that would make a big difference?
Oh, it's really hard to pick one thing. And especially with talking to someone like you who talks about having a multi-layered visibility approach, I think it's hard. That's hard. I think if your listeners are pretty skeptical around awards, I'd probably challenge them to focus on awards and think about how that can fit into the wider marketing strategy. So I think it's spending that time working out which ones are relevant to you and your audience, and making sure that you've planned everything out around that. Because I think once you've got that, it then leads off into all the other things. It's, you know, the networking that you get off the back of that is then going to get you probably invited onto someone's podcast or get coverage in this thing. So it's all those bits that add to it. And I think, you know, if your audience is as skeptical as you've been in the past about awards, then I would be saying take a look at that, because I think it can be game changing for people.
Amazing. Brilliant advice. If somebody wants to come and get your help to raise their own profile in lots of different ways, where is the best place for them to go?
So I'm biggest on LinkedIn. So you can find me really easy just by popping my name into LinkedIn. I also dabble on Instagram, and I'm on the other platforms as well, but they would be the ones that I would go for.
Brilliant. And make sure you go and have a listen to Sophie's podcast, Beyond the Bio. I am on there. So yeah, go and have a listen, because there's some really good guests on there and really diverse industries as well. Like people doing lots of different things.
Yeah. Well, we focus on one teeny element of profile each week. So there's really cool stuff there. You know, we've got stuff around podcasting, YouTube. Obviously, you were talking more generally about your story, which was awesome. We've got stuff around awards. We've got books. We've got everything.
Yeah, it's a really good podcast. We'll put the link to that as well. Thank you so much for coming on today and chatting to us. And thank you, everybody, for listening, as always. You know that I've been challenging myself recently to think a bit differently, especially with the spiritual stuff, and to just challenge my own thinking around things, because I think we can get set in our ways of what we think, and we don't allow ourselves to have a look and see if things have changed. And one of the things I did was have a look and see if awards had changed from the last time. You know, years ago, I was so set in my ways thinking about awards, and I wanted to challenge that and did, and actually found some really good stuff out there. And I would love to challenge you to do the same if that's how you think about awards. I will be back next week with another episode. Until then, have an amazing week, whatever it is that you're doing. Thank you for listening to Making Money Online with Lisa Johnson. If you'd like to get hold of my guide to launching, go to lisajohnson.com/launch and let's get you making money online.